Then to move on, the first item on the agenda is advisory opinion request 2021-03, the National Republican Senatorial Committee and National Republican Congressional Committee, submitted by Jessica Johnson, Chris Winkleman, Ryan Dollar, and Aaron Clark. We're joined today by Jennifer First Johnson and Ryan Grant Clark, the Requesters Council, who are available to respond to questions from the commissioners, if there are any. Ms. Johnson and Mr. Dollar, I want to say welcome. I did say it earlier, but I want to say it on the record for you. Welcome today. And we also have from the Office of General Counsel, Heather Philmeyer and Robert Knopp from OGC here to discuss the matter. So we will ask OGC to begin with the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning, Commissioners. Before you in Agenda Documents 21-19-A and B are draft advisory opinions responding to a request from the National Republican Senatorial Committee and the National Republican Congressional Committee. The requesters, who are national party committees comprised of all sitting Republican members of the Senate and the House, ask whether their members may use campaign funds to pay for personal security expenses to protect themselves and their immediate family members in light of the current heightened threat environment to which they are subject because of their duties as office holders. Both drafts conclude that they may, because the costs arise due to senators and representatives' roles as federal office holders. We did not receive any comments on the request or on the drafts. Thank you, and I would be happy to address any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Knopp. I'm going to turn to my commissioners, fellow commissioners. Are there any questions for the Office of General Counsel or for our requesters?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Cooksey.
I think off the bat, it would be helpful to hear from the requesters about whether they have any views about which draft they prefer or any concerns they have with either draft.
Thank you, Commissioner Cooksey. Requesters, feel free. Mr. Dollar, Ms. Johnson, would you like to respond?
I'm sorry, can y'all hear us okay?
We can now. Thank you.
Wonderful. I apologize. Okay. Thank you for having us today. We would love to respond. Thank you for your time for this, what we perceive to be a very important issue. When we submitted this request, we did it in line with the request that the commission dealt with in 2017 and 2017-07, where the commission approved an advisory opinion request that asked for confirmation that non-structural security expenses were a proper use of campaign funds, both ordinary and necessary, and for a lawful purpose, not otherwise prohibited by statute. And at that time, in light of the current threat facing members of Congress, the commission rightfully decided unanimously, might I add, that the threats that those members face today necessitated a proactive rather than a reactive response. The commission continued to state that members are no longer able to wait until confirmation of a threatening communication before taking steps necessary to protect themselves and their families. So in light of the threat that we face today, which unfortunately has not subsided, I would argue has only increased, we thought it was incredibly important to ask that campaign funds be able to be used to hire security personnel, professional, legitimate, bona fide security personnel to protect members and their families. And I must take a moment to add that, you know, it should go without saying that the request was for just that. It was for bona fide, professional, legitimate security personnel. We in no way object to the use of the word bona fide in draft B. However, we do think it's really important to note that the point of the request was to permit members to quickly and efficiently make arrangements to protect themselves and their families and remove any bureaucracy or hurdles in the way. Defining bona fide the way that draft B does by referencing licensing, insurance, and bonding requirements, which by the way differ in every state and in every jurisdiction across the country, it just creates one more hurdle. Practically speaking, if a threat were to be made in the midst of the day and a member would like to engage security personnel to sit outside their home at night so themselves and their families can sleep soundly, having to check off and tick through licensing requirements, bonding requirements, that certainly aren't second nature to these members, something they know off the top of their heads, might create an additional hurdle that would only make it seem like the request for security was just too difficult to tackle. I mean, furthermore, these members travel, especially in campaign season, all across the country, sometimes making multiple stops in multiple states and jurisdictions in one day. So to require them to, you know, confirm and check out all of these licensing and bonding and insurance requirements in order for these trips to be made seems a little bit cumbersome, especially when we're talking about quite literally protecting the members and their families. So, you know, we want to be exceedingly clear that we never intended for the security personnel utilized to be anything other than legitimate, bona fide, professional security personnel. Frankly, suggesting otherwise is a little bit insulting and ridiculous. And we feel like it's playing politics with the safety and security of these members and families. So, you know, while we wholeheartedly support the first draft, we were thrilled to see it and feel like it's in line with the precedent that the commission has issued specifically with respect to advisory opinion 2017-07 that was issued unanimously. We you know, are concerned with some of the requirements set forth in draft B.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Cooksey.
I guess this question is best directed at OGC, if they have any insight, or maybe if my fellow commissioners have any insight. In what we're calling draft B or revised draft A, in one of the, as the requesters indicated, one of the conditions of being a bona fide personal security personnel services licensure, I don't know in the short time we've been able to do a 50 state survey of what the occupational licensing requirements are in these states, but it seems to me that that is some vague wording that might cause some confusion if, for example, a state did not have licensure for security services, but suppose a firm had a business license. Is it clear that they would be licensed under this AO, or how would that work if we know, or maybe we're creating more confusion than we need to?
Mr. Knopf?
I really don't know how to answer that, to be honest. I don't think it answers itself. I would have assumed that it meant licensing for the purpose of providing security, not business license, given the context. So I think that's the most logical or reasonable way to read it. I don't know if something else was intended.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Please go ahead.
And maybe this is a question for the requesters who are maybe more expert in this. You know, I guess one of the other conditions that I'd like your reaction on is the exclusion of the use of the permissible use of these campaign funds for personal security services if this is in the revised draft, if the members are otherwise are not otherwise being protected by federal law enforcement agents or Capitol Police. Of course, the Capitol Police are federal law enforcement agents, so that's a bit redundant. But, you know, how to the extent that you know, how does that work in practice for members of the leadership of the House and the Senate? They, of course, have Capitol Police details that follow them, but not all members do, though they are under the protection of Capitol Police when they're on Capitol grounds. At the same time, members of leadership's families don't necessarily have Capitol Police protection. So, you know, is there a risk that this becomes administratively impossible, to take a hypothetical, if the majority leader, Senator Schumer, has a Capitol Police detail, his family lives in New York, would it be the case that they can have personal security services when he's out of town, but not when he's in town? How does this exclusion impact the administrability of the use of personal security services, in your view?
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner. I think that's a very valid question. And again, we are in favor of a reading of this request that would state that this is perfectly permissible under the regulation and the advisory opinions that the commission has already issued as a necessary and ordinary use of campaign funds. And I think any restrictions that are placed on top of a request for very legitimate and regular security would certainly be cumbersome and burdensome when we're quite literally talking about the safety of members and their families. I do think about the incident that happened on the baseball field that I believe precipitated the request in 2017. And there, if my memory serves, the leadership that were present at that baseball practice had security detail, but the other members did not. And I think it was widely reported and agreed that should there have, not been that leadership security, that would have been highly problematic. And should additional security have been present, that would have been, very helpful in deterring the threat. And so here, I would remind the commission that, we're not dealing, unfortunately, with hypotheticals. We're dealing with real life threatening situations where members and their family in the past have been threatened and feel threatened today. And we would again, remind the commission that we're certainly in agreement and talking about very legitimate professional security. But any additional, regulations or checks that must be put on top of that request would only be cumbersome to these members who are trying to protect themselves and their families. And I agree. I think it would make it likely that they might think it's not worth doing. And I hesitate and think that's terrifying to think what could result.
Yeah, and I would add to answer your question, Commissioner Cooksey, specifically, I don't know the answer to kind of the interplay between leadership detail and where exactly that extends to, but I think that goes to why we like draft A so much. Because if we don't know how, that would impact leadership detail and their travel plans, we don't want the commission or, the candidates and members themselves to have to make that analysis. So,
And to be clear, the intent is not to interfere with Capitol Police. I think that's really important to state. We're in no way suggesting that they're not capable of doing their job, but we certainly think that it's important to fill in the cracks, where necessary. And in this threat environment, all the security that a member and their families believe that they need to be able to continue to do their job and live their lives, we're in favor of.
Thank you.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm a little bit puzzled by the last back and forth because the request itself says on page 2 in footnote 5, in certain instances, one or more federal law enforcement agencies may offer to provide security to a member or member's family. The request would only apply in those instances where federal agents are not protecting the member or member's families, and in no way would any private personnel retained pursuant to this request interfere with the operations of federal law enforcement agencies. So that language in the revised draft comes straight out of the request, which I assume you meant what you said when you submitted it. So I assume you have no objection to our including language in the response that comes directly out of your request.
Yes, Commissioner, we wholeheartedly, and as I just said, we certainly do not intend to interfere. We do not intend for the security that is hired to interfere with Capitol Police. That's certainly not the intent. That being said, we do think, as I just discussed with the situation on the baseball field in 2017, additional security would have certainly been helpful. I'm certain that the members of Congress that have felt threatened, as has been reported publicly over the course of the past few months, that I'm certain they would have found it helpful to have security at their homes, which is not something that is currently provided, to my knowledge, by Capitol Police. And so that's simply what we're asking for, in the same manner that the advisory opinion in 2017 thought it was a proper use of campaign funds to protect the actual physical structure of the home. We think it is logically, makes sense that they would consider the logical use of campaign funds and a proper use of campaign funds to protect the actual humans as well, when the Capitol Police security does not permit that use of funds.
I Yes, I understand. I remember well the that tragic incident on the baseball field and the commission's response to it. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the language in that you were just disputing comes directly out of the request, and it was just incorporated into the revised draft. Let me back up for a second. I thank you, by the way. Let me start with that. Thank you for raising a very important and serious question. And I think that all of the commissioners have been grappling with this and have been working in good faith to try and figure out what is the best way to answer it. I assume we can all take it as a given, I hope you do, that everyone is concerned with the safety of members of Congress, and no one wants anyone to be unsafe or to feel unsafe. So, you know, we can certainly, I think, all start with that as a first principle. I originally thought this was going to be an easier answer than it turned out to be, the more I thought about it. I actually think the request about, you know, putting in security lights, security cameras, and hiring one of those companies that, you know, you punch a panic button or whatever for people's homes was in some ways a more straightforward question than this one. And you raised this question with the backdrop. I mean, you didn't mention in your request the events of January 6th, but that has been very present in my mind as I've been thinking about how to address this question, certainly raises serious concerns about safety, not to mention the fact that in the past week, we've seen two mass shootings, one of which certainly raises some concerns of people being targeted on the basis of gender and or race. So there's a pretty fraught backdrop to all of this. And it's been suggested, and there was an article in Business Insider this morning, that there could be unintended consequences to a broad response. I'll fess up. I asked to have revised draft A, which I styled that way because it is pretty close to the original draft, put on the agenda, not because I thought these particular words were the precise and perfect way of addressing a concern that I was starting to have. And then, you know, this morning woke up and read in Business Insider that apparently other people were having it as well. But because it seemed to me that in order to avoid unintended consequences, perhaps some additional language was warranted. I would actually feel more comfortable if we could put that language out and for public comment for a couple of weeks and see if somebody else has a better way of framing it. Because as I said, I'm not pretending that's the perfect solution, but I think the intent was to try and get out exactly what you just said, that the assumption here is that what the request is asking about is professional, legitimate, bona fide. I mean, I don't know that those words are entirely clear on their face either, but I think we're all talking about the same thing. Let me ask you another question though. This request is from the party committees on behalf of half of the members of Congress and would certainly be relied on by all members of Congress. Why the party committees? Why are you requesting this?
Certainly. Might I just add one important clarification, I think, for the record to your earlier point? I just want to state clearly that I actually don't think draft B, as we've been referring to it, is in keeping with our request. I do think the additional hurdles regarding the licensure and bonding and insurance requirements certainly add another layer that frankly wasn't present in the advisory opinion in 2017. There was no requirement in the 2017-07 advisory opinion that the people installing the security apparatuses be by licensed or experienced or have any sort of certain qualifications. It was just noted that this was important, that time was of the essence, and we must move forward. And so it was permitted. And so we were asking for the same treatment here. And so I just wanted to be clear that, you know, we respectfully do disagree that B is in keeping with our request, because we think it is importantly distinct. As far as the question about why we're asking on behalf of the party committees, I think that as party committee counsel and as committees wholly, I think your job, if you do it well, is to support the members and candidates that you work with. And so because this is unfortunately not hypothetical, but because it's also not limited to one particular member or senator, unfortunately, this is a incident and a pain that's being felt widely by many people in our caucus on both sides of the aisle, might I add. We thought it was certainly an appropriate thing for the party committees to ask in support of their members and candidates.
Well, as you know, we have a statutory hurdle that we have to get past, which is that an advisory request, an advisory opinion, can only be issued to a person in relation to a transaction or activity that person is planning on undertaking. And it is not the party committees themselves that would be undertaking this. You've referred several times already to the Sergeant at Arms opinion, which frankly, we kind of bent the rules on that one due to the exigent circumstances. But honestly, I don't think that I would have been able to get there had not we had a letter from an actual member of Congress, Congressman Harper, who wrote to us with a comment that pretty much re-asked the same question. He didn't formally join in the request, but we did have an actual member of Congress whose name was on the line, so to speak, on that one, even though we formally issued the opinion to the Sergeant at Arms. And we did that because of the exit. You know, we probably should have made them go back and swap it so that the member was asking the request and the Sergeant at Arms was issuing the comment, but we didn't do that due to the exigent circumstances. But I do think that it's I do wonder why there are no members of Congress who have joined in this request. Would have been a simple matter for someone to submit a one sentence letter saying, I join in this request. You are here on behalf of many members of Congress. And yet the request cites to newspaper articles about what anonymous members of Congress have said about their concerns, rather than having an actual member of Congress voice their own concerns. So it's a little bit one step removed, and I don't want to be overly technical here, because I recognize we are talking about the safety of members of Congress, and it is a very important concern. But I'm still just a little bit puzzled as to why there is not, I don't know, someone from leadership or, Mr. Harper, back in the earlier one, was the chair of House Administration, I think, and then wrote in that capacity, why there is no member of Congress who wanted to put their name on this.
Certainly. Well, I mean, as you've noted, this is not not in keeping with what the commission has done previously. There are other examples of advisory opinions. There was an advisory opinion issued in 2006 where a party committee was making a request on behalf of campaign committees, and that was also approved. I believe it was with respect to some of the legal or building funds. So this is not the first time that this has been done. And again, as you noted, as was true with the 2017 opinion, the same is unfortunately true today. This was a very urgent matter. And we've now waited 2 months from the time we filed the opinion, and we think time is of the essence. And so that, was another important consideration here. But I would also note, unfortunately, that while I'm certain that there are, would be many members, again, on both sides of the aisle, who would be willing to say that this is important, as we've just seen last night, unfortunately, it's still possible that this is made into a political request. which is certainly was not the intent. The intent was a apolitical, bipartisan, legitimate request for security. And just in the past 12 hours, suggestions have been made that, you know, that the intent was something else. And so you can certainly understand that, you know, were we to attach any specific member's name to that, we'd basically be feeding them to the wolves, as, you know, unfortunately, detractors like to try to make politics out of something that was certainly not that.
Yeah. And I would add that we're, as a party committee, we are uniquely situated, as we all know, kind of in the FECA, you know, it's just three on each side, and we do have a uniquely, like, representative, collaborative situation with respect to candidates.
Well, I mean, part of what you said suggests to me, though, you said it was a bipartisan request. It's not technically a bipartisan request, but it is, it's going to be used by both sides.
I hope so. Yes.
That is certainly true. It will be relied on by members on both sides of the aisle.
With all due respect, Commissioner, there was a tweet last night where the Democrats, I think it was on Democracy Docket, claimed that they had asked for it. They had asked for this request. They publicly tweeted that. So it sounds like it is bipartisan. We're happy to hear that. We think it's important for both sides.
I did not see that tweet. I was not on Twitter last night because I was thinking about this.
Sure.
But that's interesting. But does that suggest, I mean, if this is really a request on behalf, essentially, of all members of Congress, does that suggest that this would be better addressed through a rulemaking? I mean, I think that I'm somewhat hesitant to suggest that because obviously that would take longer. and I do recognize that there are some exigent circumstances here, but is this, I mean, you guys are lawyers, you're well familiar with the FECA. Is this the sort of thing that the commission ought to address through a rulemaking so that we could get more comments? We could get a fuller record and perhaps put to rest some of the concerns that that some people have suggested.
So I don't think that's necessary because of how logical of an extension.
Sorry, I lost.
Madam Chair, we appear to have.
Have we lost the requesters?
They're still on, but their video stopped. Mr. Dollar? Ms. First, Mr. Dollar, this is Laura Sinem with the Federal Election Commission. Can you hear me?
Sorry. I think the video is now back on, Madam Secretary, but I'm not sure if we have audio.
We lost it again.
Well, should we?
Again, let's see.
Yeah, do you want to just do that? Yeah.
Madam Secretary, we're just going to do like a 5-minute recess so that can check to ask them maybe to log out, log back in so that we can,
yes, I can pause the live feed if you would like, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you. Madam Chair, you may reconvene the meeting when ready.
Thank you. We're going to resume our open meeting. We had a little technical difficulties, that's what happens nowadays. So I believe at this moment, the requesters were responding, if you would like to proceed.
Yeah, so as to the question of a rulemaking, I think that, you know, our first priority is to get our AO approved now. And, you know, we are not necessarily opposed to an eventual rulemaking. I'm not sure if I find a rulemaking necessary because of 113.2 and the sergeant at arms AO, and I mean just a long line of AOs here seem to make this a straightforward request. But so not necessarily opposed to rulemaking, but today we are hoping to just get our advisory opinion approved.
Commissioner
Weintraub?
Thank you. You had said that in the Sergeant at Arms, we didn't set criteria for the technical skills of the people who would be installing the security systems at the homes of members. And And that's true, but this is really quite different. And the more I think about it, the more different I think it is. This question arises as part of a broader debate, which certainly I'm not suggesting that we're going to settle here today or at the FEC, but there is a much larger issue that is being debated right now about the impact on democracy, the impact on who we are as Americans when members of Congress feel the need to wall themselves off from the general public. And, you know, there's a debate going on about the fencing that was put around the Capitol and how much of the Capitol complex needs to be fenced off. And that fencing has been, you know, withdrawn to some degree. It's been pulled back so that a little bit more space is outside the fencing, but there's still fencing around the Capitol. And a lot of people are actively debating whether that is a good thing to have the People's House, the Capitol of the United States, not be a space where the American people can freely come and go. And the notion of members of Congress having armed guards around them to be interposed between the elected representatives of the people and people who may want to express their opinions to the people, to their elected representatives. And, you know, people sometimes have fervent views that they want to express. And I've never thought of us as a country where the leadership of the country had to be surrounded by armed guards and needed to keep the public at arm's length at all times. But, you know, it's, as I said, I don't think we're going to resolve all of those questions here today, but it does, it does raise for me the issue that I think however we do this, we want to make sure that it's done in a way that there are professionals who are, you know, like I said, I'm not sure what the precise words are, but I think we do want to ensure, I would want to ensure that the people who would be in a position to perhaps block members of the public from access to their elected leaders, one would hope that they would be doing it in a way that was sensitive to the First Amendment concerns of, you know, members of the public who might want to approach somebody in an airport. The airport example I thought was actually interesting, since everybody's got to pass through a metal detector before they get to the gate. So, you know, when you're sitting in the waiting room of an airport, yeah, you're kind of a captive audience, but at the same time, that might be one of the safer places that you could be, because it's the least likely place where somebody's going to pull a weapon. My point, though, is that the need for professionalism on the part of anyone who might seek to interfere with a member of the public trying to express their views to the elected leadership of the country, that is quite a different question than the guy who comes to your house and is installing a security system. Those people are not going to be having any interfering with members of the public as they try and express their views to their elected leadership. So I do think that which is one of the reasons why I think it would benefit from a little bit more comment on exactly how one would go about crafting the guidance that would avoid the unintended, that would avoid unduly burdening the members who are trying to protect themselves, but also avoid the unintended consequences that at least some people have raised concerns about. Should there be no criteria whatsoever?
Sure. And with all due respect, you know, we're not talking about people who are showing up at homes in the middle of the night to have a nice conversation about legislation. We're talking about situations where members are unfortunately feeling threatened with their children in their homes in the middle of the night by people who don't, again, intend to just express their First Amendment on, you know, the way that the member is representing them, or certainly not doing it in a way that any of us would agree is appropriate or responsible. And certainly, as Ryan noted, you know, we're not opposed to a rulemaking. We are opposed to dragging this out longer than we think is necessary. And again, given the precedent, given the regulations, given the statutes, we think this is a perfectly permissible use of campaign funds. It's certainly another lawful purpose as set forth in the regulation. And we would encourage the commission to, in light of the current threat environment, to, you know, put a priority on protecting these members and their families now.
Could I ask if you have any, just one more question, if I may, Madam Chair? Could I ask if you have any suggestions for wording that might, I think we're all talking about the same thing, honestly, and I wonder if you have any suggestions for us as to how best to frame that notion of bona fide, legitimate, professional criteria that might be appropriate to put in the advisory opinion, but that would not unduly burden the members who are seeking to protect themselves.
I'm not sure if I have any language off the top of my head, but I am skeptical that any members or senators are going to hire anyone but professional, legitimate security when it involves them and their own families. I think it's sort of built into kind of the request and the language. I think it's fairly assumed that it will be professional security now when it involves a person and their family.
And for that reason, I think we would suggest that less is more. You know, we would suggest that professional and bona fide, you know, are enough, are the words that can be used. And should something else need to be addressed, it can be addressed at a later time. But again, given the threat environment, you know, I don't know that it's appropriate, certainly not timely, to, you know, undergo a search for the perfect word that would eliminate all potential for misuse. I mean, certainly, commission has not sought to ensure in every advisory opinion that every potential word is defined to a T perfectly without any confusion. And that's certainly why advisory opinions have been revisited and revised over time. So we think that the threat environment necessitates quick and urgent action. And we certainly would think that professional, bona fide, legitimate are words that provide enough guidance at this point to get us moving in the right direction.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's all I have right now.
Thank you, Commissioner Weintraub. I want to join in some of the concerns that Commissioner Weintraub has mentioned and reiterate that everybody, I'm sure if I ask, they'd all shake their head, is that we're concerned about the safety of the office holders and want to come up with some resolution. But the comment received last night and the Business Insider article, they do bring those questions of how do we create not limitations for the office holder, but some limiting factors. And this is not an interest in me to try to make it burdensome in any way, but we just asked the requesters and you use the words bona fide and legitimate, but we're not able to define them right now to any comfort level that it lends in some way that maybe this should be a notice and comment, an opportunity for the community to be able to weigh in. So I want to highlight that I'm supportive of the, I think it's called revised draft A. I'm happy to kind of take some additional time. I know we don't have that, but additional time to try to flesh out the bona fide legitimate language. So I, in an effort to try to find some way, is there any interest in the requesters in granting additional time for us to try to see if we can find some compromise to work on something that can get answers. And I do recognize that a good bit of time has elapsed in your request and there is an urgent need, but I want to ask you, would you be willing to grant an extension for the commission to have some additional consideration?
I mean, we reiterate that we don't think it's necessary. And frankly, it's a little disappointing because it does feel like the motivation, was a little bit political based on the comments that were made publicly. I haven't read the Business Insider article, but certainly on Twitter and in the, response to the draft interpretive rule, which I notice has since been removed from the agenda. We don't think the additional time is necessary, but we ultimately, very legitimately want our members to be protected. And that's first goal here. We just think it's clear from the regulations that this is a permissible use of campaign funds.
Yeah, and again, this is urgent. And if a vendor, a security vendor, acts inappropriately, there are other mechanisms for that. The disbursements are disclosed. And so the public kind of knows about it. And if they, break the law, that's for law enforcement. And so that just goes back to our earlier point that the intention here is for good security because of, what's at stake. So we don't think it would be wise to delay this further just for some hypothetical that is both unlikely and has other mechanisms for addressing.
Yeah, we also can't help but note that, again, the request was made on January 26th and not 12 hours before the hearing were these concerns raised. So that I think also is slightly frustrating and certainly is problematic if the goal is to allow these members to protect themselves and their families quickly, which that is a goal.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
You've made several allusions to it, but I want to ask the question directly. I know you're referring to the CCC and DSCC comments that we got at least at 3:30 yesterday afternoon. And I have a great deal of sympathy for my colleagues who scrambled to respond to that late submission. But it seemed to me like the center of their objection was a reading of ambiguity into the term security personnel that required additional language, so whether it was bona fide or legitimate or any of these other questions that, the other terms we're having difficulty defining here at the table. I guess my question to you, just as a legal matter, as a matter of interpretation of English language, do you think their reading of the term security personnel as advanced in the interpretive rule by the chair and by Commissioner Weintraub was a reasonable or fair reading of the interpretive rule? Do you think it required this gloss, or was the plain language simple and unambiguous on its face?
Commissioner, I would propose that the plain language was simple and unambiguous on its face.
It was also my sense, but I wanted to make sure I wasn't crazy. I will say, just for the record, that I found those comments very unfair to the chair and Commissioner Weintraub in their interpretation of what I thought was plain, and whatever disagreements we may have on this on the procedure, the idea that security personnel is thugs hired to harass your opponents is not a reasonable reading. I don't think any of us would adopt in an enforcement context. So I appreciate your thoughts on that. I wanted to give you a chance to directly answer.
Thank you.
Any further? Chair. Yes, Commissioner Traynor.
I have a question for OGC with regard to draft B and this inclusion of an insurance and a bonding requirement. Do we have any sense of whether every state requires an insurance and a bonding requirement for, and I assume in a lot of cases, this is going to be law enforcement personnel working an extra job to make ends meet. And so I don't want to put in place a requirement for one of our first responders to go out and acquire insurance or acquire a bond when the state or the municipality that they may be working for doesn't necessarily require that. And so I just wonder if we have any sense of what the 50 states, what the district, Puerto Rico, everywhere whether or not there are bonding and insurance requirements for law enforcement personnel in every circumstance in order for them to be able to meet this definition of bona fide security personnel. Because I don't want to impose that type of burden on a first responder who's really probably doing this as a way to make ends meet. And I know that happens a lot in my home state of Texas, where, you know, we have law enforcement who work at grocery stores and places like that to provide security. So I've just addressed that for OGC to see if they've had the ability to look at that.
Madam Chair.
Mr. Knott. Go ahead, Mr. Knott. Thank you.
No, we have not had an opportunity to look into that yet, with the draft having come out late last night. Between then and now, no, we have not taken a look at that. We would be happy to look into it, but I can't provide you with any kind of an answer that I'm confident about at this point.
Thank you, Mr. Knott.
Any further questions for requesters or the Office of General Counsel?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Walker.
I do have a couple of questions on, and I must confess I've been of the view that this is very important and has a lot to do with how people are able or not to have a reasonable amount of assistance in security. But looking at it from the Federal Election Commission provision, you can see that there would be a lot of issues that will arise for us to deal with in connection with maybe the administration of this and whether or not campaign funds were really actually spent for this purpose or whether there was more than should or not. And as you might imagine, we get a lot of complaints for a lot of different reasons, and many are legitimate and some aren't. But I'm a little bit concerned as I go that this seems to show that any candidate or any person who's a federal elected employee can have unlimited amounts of money for that purpose. Or you might well find somebody who's running for office who has real no campaign finance money, but who might have the same kind of risks, I'm just wondering where's the cutoff there in terms of security, and also with respect to family composition. Someone might be in terms of protecting it, but also insurance for liability purposes. If are certain members of the family really covered and some not able to, or thought on that? I mean, there's a real mix that could take place when you have kids and a couple of families and they go to the beach for 10 days and come back and some still are working in the DC attending these hearings. So how does that get balanced in the application of something like this?
Well, thank you, Commissioner. First, I would note, just as a point of clarification, that we did limit the request to office holders, primarily because we thought that was best in keeping with the previous advisory opinions the commission had issued. And in an effort to have this request granted expediently, we didn't want to ask to break new ground or pose a question of first impression. So this is the question, and the request was limited to office holders. I think as far as the family arrangements, as was noted in the comment to the draft interpretive rule by the DSCC, I think we're incredibly open to any sort of family arrangement, and we certainly obviously would be in favor of the members and senators protecting themselves and their families as they see fit. Practically speaking, I would note that, you know, I think the folks and the members that get into this business, they're wanting to represent their constituents and their states. And they certainly aren't, I don't think, looking to drain their whole campaign account on security funds. Now, I mean, as a mom myself, I can tell you I'd do that if that's what I had to do to protect my children. And it's unfortunate, as Commissioner Weintraub noted, that we've got to this place in society where this is necessary. I don't suppose to, you know, put any boundaries on this, but I do think that what has become clear, unfortunately, is that this protection is necessary, certainly because these members are office holders. It is directly connected. The but-for test is met here. And so we would be in favor of permitting the use of campaign funds, as we think is permitted under the regulations, to any family arrangements and to office holders as they see fit.
So then who would be the one to determine what's either bona fide or legitimate or whatever adjective we end up having? Who's going to make that decision? Will it have to be run by, for example, us to say, is this a legitimate expenditure because of, this is breaking new ground?
I mean, yes, Commissioner, I think that's the crux of what we've been discussing this morning. I think, again, when we approached this question, it was from the position that there is a need and there is a threat, and that, you know, it never crossed our mind, frankly, that these expenses would be used for anything other than legitimate bona fide security. And we think that given the threat environment and given that we're talking about protecting members and their families, that it is important to approve this and that these members will do as best fit to protect their families. And I think I apologize, I don't remember which commissioner previously noted it, but, you know, the suggestion that a member would choose a thug to protect their family as opposed to a professional, I think is somewhat silly to me. And I think the fact that we're debating that, I'm not quite sure how we got here, but, you know, I think our position was that this is an urgent need, as was the case in 2017, that legitimate and bona fide, it's like the word obscenity, you know it when you see it, and we all agree legally that you know, we know what that is, and we think it's urgently necessary for the commission to approve that.
Yes. What happens to the person who they use campaign funds, and so you have a candidate or somebody who just got elected and they're busted flat from having to spend the money necessary to get elected, and to me, it seems a little bit uneven to deal with it in a way where a very legitimate risk could occur, but there's no campaign funds per se that are there, or maybe it's unclear when the final tab comes in, how much it's going to be, and just the practical concerns that someone might have if, if the money is not there. And yet there may be people who have a lot of money, and so they quickly get, risk-free expenditures, and they can travel and all of that. And I'm a little concerned with that. And I have one other issue that I'd like to ask you to consider. I understand, and I believe that I have not got any detailed information, that there was some recent money that was made available, like $68,000, for to ameliorate some security issues. And I'm just wondering, is there any attitude that you have been aware of in Congress of any kind to take up that issue and deal with it for other people in an equal way who are elected to Congress?
Yeah, so I'm not aware of legislation, but I would say that I think campaign funds are probably a better use than taxpayer dollars. I think that would be a much better solution.
Thank you. I, with respect to the previous comments about the need for something like a rule, I think we ought to have a hearing and let everybody, all sides of the political environment and people who else might be affected by it, to get some more input before I would be comfortable with the lack of clarity that's there. But I am not opposed at all to the idea of providing security. But at this point, for me, I think it's premature for me to support today.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. Are there any further questions for Council or OGC? I'm going to actually ask to take a 15-minute recess, Madam Secretary.
Yes, ma'am. Are you ready to begin that recess?
Yes.
All right. Jim, if you could let me know when our feed has started again. Thank you. Madam Chair, we are live recording and you may resume the meeting when ready.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We are resuming the open meeting for the Federal Election Commission. I first want to say thank you to everyone for your indulgence because this was far longer than the 15 minutes that I highlighted, but I appreciate everyone's patience with us today as we try to work forward on this one. I'm going to put it out to any commissioners if there's any further questions for the requesters are OGC.
Madam Chair, I have a motion if there's not.
Yes, Vice Chair.
In AO 2021-03, I move approval of original draft A of the agenda document 21-19 alpha with the addition of adding the phrase bona fide and legitimate as appropriate in the following lines. Page 1, line 16, page 3, line 4, and page 5, lines 3 and 8, and I would ask to direct the Office of General Counsel to add that phrase before descriptions of security personnel if I have missed any such instances.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there a discussion on this motion? Actually, I'm going to back up. If you can give us those locations again so I can follow along with the draft, I'd appreciate it.
Of course, Madam Chair. Page 1, line 16. Page 3, line 4, and page 5 at lines 3 and 8.
Thank you. Is there a discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Commissioner Walther?
I intend to ask for a motion to consider the issues that we're talking about today through a rulemaking. So whatever approach would be procedurally the best, I want to let you know that so that I'd like to make sure we do that in the proceedings today.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. We will, I'm sure there everyone be eager to entertain the motion at the time when we do not have this motion right in front of us, and we'll turn back to that very shortly. Is there any further discussion on this motion? Commissioner Weintraub?
All right, so first, give me the page and line references again.
I believe my motion also includes a request to OGC for conforming edits. So if I've missed any, hopefully I've covered that. But it should be page 1, line 16, page 3, line 4, and page 5 at lines 3 and 8.
And the addition?
The addition is the words bona fide and legitimate before descriptions of security personnel. I believe that tracks what we've discussed here at the table.
I didn't want to interrupt you, Commissioner Weintraub. Is there an interest in adding that language to the question?
Well, I'd like to get a vote on this motion. I would ask if there's, I guess, a question of parliamentary procedure.
What is the procedure for doing so with a motion of this sort on the table? And is this, can we in fact modify the underlying AOR?
We will wait for our trusty, as I like to call him, the Oracle. He might not want everyone to know that outside of the building, but.
Madam Chair, I'm yes, sorry. Mr. Calvin. I need to ask for a clarification. You're talking about adding the direction regarding a rulemaking from that Commissioner Walther mentioned, or something else that I missed?
Something else. So two questions. The first is, what is, well, I guess related questions. So when speaking of parliamentarian, I feel this need to disaggregate things. The first question is, may we modify the language of the AOR as filed by the requester? Mm-hmm. The second question is, if such is permissible, what is the procedure? And the third question is, to assuming that it matters, does the procedure differ given that there is a motion already upon the table?
I guess I'm having a little trouble following. I don't know that the commission can modify the language of the request. The requester is free to do what they want with their request, and I may need to ask my colleagues in the policy division to help out some on the answer to this question on how, if there was agreement that it would be helpful for the requester to modify the request, how that would go about doing that in a situation like this at the table. I think that's the first and second question. I'm sorry, Mr. Vice Chair, could you give me the third again?
The third is whether your answer would change given there's already a motion upon the table, but it sounds like the answer is no to that, right. That last issue.
And in terms of how to go about modifying the request, I would defer to my colleagues in the OGC Policy Division.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Okay, go ahead, Evan.
Go ahead, Mr. Stefanik.
I think the easiest way to do this would be to allow the requester to grant consent to modify the question. That would be the easiest thing to do here.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, Mr. Knott.
Maybe I misunderstood, but I thought the vice chair was talking about modifying the language in the answer, in the draft answer, as opposed to in the request itself. He did also have a question about whether to change the, or someone had a question about whether to change the question as represented in the draft AO. But I thought the primary question was, could he at the table modify the language of the answer in the draft AO?
I think what's happening is there being two answers to the question. Mr. Stepanovic is answering my question and Mr. Knopf is answering, I believe, the vice chair's question. But let me allow the vice chair, please weigh in.
I think this is very interesting, and I would eventually like to get, to Delphi Actual's level of knowledge of the parliamentary procedures. But I think for purposes of my motion, I take counsel as having already given us at least oral permission at the table to incorporate this. And frankly, I'm not sure we require their permission to add these languages to our response to their question. I'm seeing head nods for the record, which, yeah, I'm not sure that's an appropriate way of putting something in the record, but we're all working on Zoom.
Madam Chair. I'm sorry.
I'll defer.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Mr. Calvert, please.
Yes, just to clarify what I had said earlier. In terms of modifying the request, it's up to the requester to do that. In terms of proposing an amendment to the language of the answer of the draft, the commission is, any commissioner, it's an amendable document. Any commissioner is fully able to propose an amendment to our answer to their question.
Thank you.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair.
In light of that colloquy, I'm comfortable going forward on a vote on the motion.
Thank you. So any further discussion on the motion of the vice chair? Then, yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
Just sort of as a point of information, it's quite typical, actually, for us to include within the AO language that says this is based on your request and information provided at the meeting of, in this case, March 25th. We have frequently amended things at the table based on the discussion at the meeting. Sometimes we do it multiple times. We will amend the document. We'll have one discussion. We'll have one discussion, and then we hold over the matter until the next meeting. And we could have, and based on the discussion at two consecutive meetings. So that I just want to assure my colleagues that this is not unusual. And while it would be neater and I think more relaxing for all of us if we had everything lined up before we came into the meeting and then we could just, make a motion and vote for things. This kind of an extended back and forth and taking recesses and rewriting at the table, that also has happened many, many times in the agency's history. And I'm reminded of the time that I chaired the meeting, and it was also our first take your kid to work day, and we had a very complicated AO. So we were doing all of this with multiple breaks and trying to rewrite the language while we had 100 kids running around our ankles in the building. So this is actually much more orderly than some meetings we have had in the past. And having said all of that, I also want to point out that we also were working on scribbling during the break and trying to figure out how to get to a yes here. And I believe that we have just circulated a revised draft A in both, I think we have asked for the document to be made blue as well as asked for the draft to be circulated to be sent to the requesters in both clean and redline version to point out the changes. So check your emails. I mean, if we were in person, we would be scurrying around handing out pieces of blue paper so that everybody could see it. But we're doing everything electronically today.
And with that, I think that with Madam sufficient Chair. Time. Yes, Vice Chair.
No, I appreciate the warning. I think the first thing I'd say is that in the current environment, every day is take your child to work day. So yes, I have some sympathy for what that must have looked like, though, we are not so fecund as to have 100 children, but I assure you two is quite enough. On the various dueling drafts, I just don't want there to be any surprise, and I don't want us to end up in a motion to reconsider or unable to reach this. This I think the motion on the table, in my view, addresses the concerns that have been raised. It does not include some of the background information that was provided to us late last night. And I understand that there's a practice of revising things to the table. In all frankness among colleagues, I came here in part to revise some of our policies that may have been trending towards disorder. So I don't intend to support that draft. I'll let my other colleagues speak for themselves, but this is obviously harder when we can't just get in a room and talk. So we're having to do it live. And I would be very disappointed to see this draft go down and see the other draft fail and see us fail to provide guidance because of line edits added that could have been added earlier in the process. The edits that I've suggested, I think, are things that have arisen organically in the last 24 hours. I'm not sure that's true for other revisions. So I just want to forecast where I'm at. If anyone else wants to, we're debating the motion, but it does seem relevant. Madam, so there's some game theory here.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Traynor.
I would move the previous question.
Thank you, Commissioner Traynor. We have a motion before us. I'm going to now call the question. All those in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 All those opposed, please say no.
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 The motion fails with 3 voting in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, and Commissioner Traynor, and 3 voting against, Commissioner Walther, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself. Thank you. Are there any further motions?
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Walther, I believe, let me, 1 second. Commissioner Walther, feel free, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure procedurally where we are at the tail end of the conversations there. So whenever it's appropriate to make a motion, I would do that. Okay. Respect to.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. I appreciate that. There are any other motions? Commissioner Weintraub.
I will ask council whether do we have to I know that my staff has emailed something, but is it an official blue draft yet? Is it something that we can discuss?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Ms. Stevens.
Is my understanding that that document is in the process of being tried to make blue, but we have not yet had a sufficient time to do so.
I can't understand that. It must be at least 30 seconds.
We are working on it ASAP, but it has not yet made so.
It's harder when I can't see the blue paper in front of me.
There is no blue paper. So. Work not.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Commissioner Weintraub.
I'm sorry to have to do this, but might I suggest that we take another short recess so that the document can be made blue and people can have a chance to look at it?
Of course. We are going to take a recess. I will suggest that it will be 15 minutes, but we see how that has gone so far today. So we're again, let's say 15 minutes, but if we do not find that the requesters have not received the document, we'll of course make sure there's adequate time for you all to have the opportunity to review. So thank you. Madam Secretary?
Yes, ma'am. Jim, can you go ahead and let me know when we're up and running again on YouTube, please? Thank you, Madam Chair. We are live recording and you may resume the meeting when ready.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. We are resuming the the open meeting for Thursday, March 25th. Again, I do want to say to the requesters, thank you for your continued indulgence. So are there any, I believe we do have a motion that we need to proceed with.
Madam Chair, I have a special motion.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair.
I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the commission may consider agenda document number 21-19C.
Thank you. Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there any discussion on this motion? Seeing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 I have not seen that.
But you have not.
Done a submission, of course.
Thank you. The motion passes 6-0.
Madam
so,
Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
I move the adoption of the second revised draft A, document 21-19-C.
Thank you, Vice Chair. Is there a discussion on this motion?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Vice Chair.
Just briefly, and I don't want to further belabor this. I'm comfortable making this motion because I don't see substantive differences between the motion that was already voted down and this draft. And I'm glad we can put this to bed. I have some hope that in the future we can do it further in advance. You know, we did have a flu draft sitting out there for a few days. So hopefully we can move towards a more orderly approach to these matters going forward. But I'd like to see the respondents or the requesters get the relief they're requesting.
Thank you, Vice Chair. I would agree with that. I think that the two of us have spoken and don't want to share any of that, but both believe the need to work as far in advance and as expeditiously as possible. And I think that we all can agree on that. And I look forward to pushing that further along with you. But any discussion on this motion? Seeing no interest, I will call the question. Yes, Commissioner Walker.
Sorry, Ms. I'm just curious to know of the impact of that. If this motion passes, then that will eliminate the need for any further voting on whether or not to go forward.
Go forward on any potential.
To actually formally create the mechanism to begin to implement this.
I don't want to put any words. Are you talking about in the sense of moving with any potential rulemaking? Is that what you're talking about?
Again, I was wanting to be in a position to make a motion, but if it sounds to me like this will cut that off.
No, I don't believe that it will cut it off at all. Personally, and only speaking for myself, I see that as we're looking at providing some guidance to the requesters and those members of Congress now. But from the discussion that we've had today and quite a significant back and forth, there are still other points that need to be resolved that I personally would be supportive if there is a motion that would be coming for rulemaking. I do not think it circumvents any potential future actions by the commission.
It wouldn't be timely to make that motion to the meeting after this vote, though.
Yes, I believe so.
It would be or not be?
It would be.
Okay.
Thank you. Are there any further discussion? Then I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. All those opposed, please say no.
No.
Thank you. The motion passes with 5 voting in favor, the Vice Chair, Commissioner Cooksey, Commissioner Traynor, Commissioner Weintraub, and myself, and the Commissioner Walker voting against the motion. Thank you. Thank you to the requesters for your patience in these regards, and we appreciate your appearance today. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to move ahead to, I'm not sure if anyone heard me during one of the many breaks. We're going to move straight to Advisory Opinion 2021-01, Illuminate Incorporated, submitted by... Yes.
I apologize, but just before we move on, in light of Commissioner Walter's question...
Oh, I apologize. Thank you. Thank you.
Can we ask unanimous consent to consider the opening of a rulemaking on this matter? I'm not sure of the procedure, but I'd like to get that vote on the table.
Yes. Thank you for that. I totally, in the scheme of all the time we spent on the others, was just jumping ahead. So I do apologize, Commissioner Walter. You had indicated an interest in proceeding or opening, directing the commission, OGC, to begin a rulemaking. I believe everybody has indicated, at least by nodding heads, that they have some interest in this as well. But would you like to make a formal direction to OGC? And the vice chair has said he would, obviously, there'll be unanimous consent, I believe.
Well, I can do that. I think, sure, I would move that. We begin to explore the ways in which we can better implement the procedure that we've just voted on and have been encompassed and considered in the recent motions at this meeting and some previous outside comment regarding whether or not to implement a program to assist financially and elected federal officials on security reasons, and that we had attempt to implement that and take all deliberate speed to consider it and act on it.
Thank you, Commissioner Walker. I believe I had the vice chair, but I kind of interrupted you when you were speaking too. Thank you for putting us back on course to where we needed to be. Did you also want to move forward with this direction. It's not no necessary for a formal motion for this, but I do believe it's in fairness so that everybody here that's interested, I will take that as a motion from Commissioner Welker. Is there any discussion on that motion?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Vice Chair.
I mean, I guess mostly some background, but partially a clarification. You know, as many of the people on inside the building, the proverbial building these days, are aware, Commissioner Weintraub and I on the Regulations Committee have already had substantive discussions along the lines of initiating a rulemaking on this matter. I wonder if, just for purposes of formality, if Commissioner Walther would have considered a friendly amendment to his motion to instruct the Regulations Committee to proceed with all deliberate speed to open an NPRM on the subject of candidate security broadly, and to open the notice and comment period at the earliest opportunity, or words to that effect.
Of course. Of course. Thank you for bringing it up.
Thank you.
In that case, ma'am, I'd move the previous question.
Thank you. The question has been moved. Any further discussion? Seeing none, I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. 6-0. Thank you very much. Thank you, Commissioner Welker, and thank you to the Vice Chair.